This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I am Caitlin White. Hello from what feels like the depths of summer already. Later in our episode, we discuss sleep health despite everything currently happening in the world right now. And our healthcare hero has been working on implementing telehealth options to provide care to patients without requiring them to come to her hospital. But now, our news update. The coronavirus has obviously changed our lives forever, and going back to whatever you called normal before this seems to be becoming less of an option by the day. But in a new article from Vox, it suggested that not all of the ways COVID-19 has changed society are bad. Now hear me out. Living in quarantine for months has offered the most privileged among us a rare opportunity to reflect on our lives and potentially to reset them. When Vox asked their readers what they'll take away from the quarantine to post-COVID life, they listed the following ideas: reducing consumerism, slowing down and putting less pressure on ourselves, prioritizing family and friends, ethical action and activism, exercising, baking, and working from home. Despite the advice of scientists, many people seem to have differing opinions on how serious coronavirus is. Maybe even the people in your closest friend groups. With more on how coronavirus might be showing you a new side of your friends is Radio MD's Bill Klaproth.
So is the pandemic testing some of your friendships? Have some shown support and others not so much? A report in WebMD asks the question, is the pandemic revealing who your true friends are? So if you're feeling disillusioned with some of your friendships and wondering what to do, first look inward and ask, what is their lack of communication triggering in me? Take some time to become aware of what you're thinking and feeling and understand that first. Review your friendship. Have you always been close? Do you go for long periods without talking? And then try not to take it personal, as you don't really know what is going on in their life right now that may be causing this. Finally, extend some loving kindness to yourself and your friend. While it's understandable you'd be upset when friends aren't there for you, think carefully before breaking off these friendships. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
With summer bringing many people out of their isolations, the CDC has updated their guidelines on social activities. If you're hosting a cookout or some other gathering, encourage guests to bring their own food and drinks. Call restaurants in advance to make sure the staff will be wearing masks and socially distanced seating is available, and sit outside if possible. If you're going to a newly reopened library, use advanced checkout systems if possible and seek out digital materials over print. And if you're traveling, ask the motel or hotel about their cleaning policies and take the stairs instead of the elevator. With such a high influx of people dying, yet it not being safe to gather in large groups, COVID-19 is changing the ways we grieve. For more, we go to Radio MD Scott Webb.
As we are learning, COVID-19 is affecting every aspect of life and death, apparently. Families whose loved ones die during the COVID-19 pandemic face unprecedented restrictions and challenges. To not say goodbye to loved ones, to not have loved ones attend funeral services, or to not even find a permanent resting place for a loved one is changing how people grieve. Most families are having graveside funerals and postponing memorial services until stay-at-home orders and restrictions on group gatherings are lifted. One option for families is to hold home funerals, but that should be done in consultation with a funeral director, and proper PPE should be worn. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
All right, it looks like masks are going to be around for a while longer, so let's break them down a bit. First, the fabrics. Seamstresses around the world have stepped up to the plate to stitch cotton masks for the masses. And when it comes to fabrics, in general, the more easily you can see through the fabric when holding it up to a light, the more layers of that particular fabric you need to create an effective mask. Using this guide, a pillowcase likely will require fewer layers than a bandana, which may require fewer layers than, say, a t-shirt. The main purpose of wearing a mask is to catch outgoing particles from infected people before they reach the air, not to stop viral particles from getting in. Most fabric masks do not fit snugly enough to offer excellent filtration of inbound viral particles, which can be smaller than 1 micrometer in size. Now, how about washing them? They don't really get dirty, right? Well, ideally, you would wash your mask after each use. When you return home after running errands, carefully remove your mask and either launder it by hand immediately or store it someplace where you'll remember to toss it into the washing machine with the next batch of regular laundry. I don't know about you, but I feel like I haven't had a good night's sleep in weeks. With the endless stream of protest videos and updates and calls to actions keeping me scrolling on Twitter way past my bedtime, and oh yeah, coronavirus is still a threat. Whatever world events are prioritized for you, it's probably keeping you up at night also. Joining us to talk sleep health despite it all is Dr. Patrick Porter, the founder of BrainTap. So when it comes to sleep, I know there's kind of a lot of things to cover right now and things in terms of things that are disrupting our sleep these days. But I guess the most pressing for me is, you know, all of the news of protests and kind of seeing these disturbing images and traumatic news. How does that disrupt our sleep?
Well, the key thing here is that our brain, no matter how big the problem is, it's going to try to solve that problem. And unfortunately, it's going to disrupt our sleep because that's when our subconscious is the most active. And, you know, people will, even in the best of times, I mean, if somebody's getting married, they'll dream about the wedding. If they're now we're talking about a negative experience where it's almost like we're being, because the images are so graphic and it's being shared on social media. I mean, I can't pick up the phone without one or two people showing me something. It's just continued to trigger these images. And really, it's kind of like a post-traumatic stress disorder event because it's just constantly reminding us. So the brain's going to try to solve that problem and keep us awake, actually.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been experiencing that as well. And it's interesting to think of it in that way, you know, as kind of your brain wants to fix it almost. So even before all these protests, of course, COVID-19 was a big issue on the minds of many. Now, you say that COVID-19 shined a much needed spotlight on America's sleep deficit. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, there's two different percentages that I really signify this. Number one is that one in three people are having a sleeping problem, which means it could be clinically diagnosed, meaning they're getting not enough sleep. They're not getting 4 hours of continuous sleep, so they're not reaching that deep level four sleep. And number two, more than two-thirds of the American population is not getting 6 hours sleep or more. And between 6 and 8 hours is what most people need. And so they're not getting that sleep. So we're sleep deprived, which means we're not making good decisions. Even though we might be in bed for 8 hours, we're not getting the sleep that we need.
How would you say that isolation and quarantine, you know, most of us have been in some type of version of that for at least 2 or 3 months now. How has that impacted sleep?
Well, our brain loves consistency and patterns. So when we're by ourselves all the time, we have to entertain. There's something in psychology they call the infinite now, which means that our brain, it's what happens to people who are in prison or they've been held hostage. Their brain doesn't start recognizing times of the day or sleeping patterns, all of these things. So we get disrupted. So even though we know we're going to work from home, we might work in our pajamas till noon, you know, and then stay up till 11 or 12 o'clock watching TV that we wouldn't do otherwise. And pretty soon those lines get blurred, especially after 21 days. They know neurologically the new patterns start to form every 72 hours, but it really starts to create these, what they call in neurophysiology, the wiring and firing effect, which means now the brain starts setting up these new patterns that are now, they're not healthy. You know, it's not healthy to just stay up till you're drop dead tired and then stay in bed until, you know, our brain, we should be going to sleep at our predetermined time, even when we're not working on the weekends. They say for people that have sleeping problems, especially, they should go to sleep. They go to sleep 10 o'clock every night. They should go to sleep 10 o'clock every night, even on the weekends, because their brain, once it gets into that ritualistic pattern, the brain functions the best, you know, so that it's really disrupting that. Isolation too. That's why I think social media is just going crazy, whether it's good or bad things, is because we crave connection. We are social beings. And if we're not able to connect, you know, even on a basic level, some people even connecting is going to Starbucks and having a coffee in the crowd of people, even though they're alone, they still feel like they're with people, you know, and that's been taken away from us.
So now that people are starting to go back to work and, you know, go back to this so-called normalcy, stores opening, you know, Starbucks, like you said, kind of opening again, how can we get our sleep schedules back on track?
Well, the first key is start your about 2 hours before sleep for most people, or an hour and a half, you need to start some form of ritual to go to sleep. The first thing is turning off lights in your home. It's not just the blue light. I mean, obviously, most people know they should stop watching their screens, not their TV as much. Their TV, if they're sitting 4 feet away from their TV, it won't affect them as much. But if their home is totally lit, that's probably the biggest deterrent, because the brain doesn't know it's time for sleep. 100 years ago, the average person slept over 12 hours. So now in the 80s, in the 70s, it went down to 8 hours. In the 80s, and now it's more like 7 hours. And then now they're saying it's more like 6 hours is our average. So we're losing sleep because of light. Our brain and body, our hormonal system is triggered from the light from our sun, because we're still, even though we've evolved as a culture, our bodies are still this body that's still primitive. It thinks we should be outside hunting and gathering all day long. And the light from the sun actually triggers things like melatonin production, which is a brain cleaning solution. Also, it really triggers our circadian rhythm. So if we're not in bed before 12 o'clock at night, our brain doesn't even know to start producing that. And then if it doesn't produce that neurocycle that happens, it throws everything else off for the rest of the day. The other is that we should not lay in bed or use a snooze button. If you can help it, if you have to use an alarm, pick an alarm sound that's pleasant, not one that's going to just put you into fight or flight. If you start your day off that way, the nervous system actually gets locked into a cycle of fear and frustration. That even happens when you go to sleep, because some people will set their alarm and they'll wake up throughout the night to check to make sure they don't have to hear, because they don't have to hear the alarm. And that means it's disrupting their sleep. So it's better to, a lot of times people will use like these light alarms that bring light into the room to awaken you. Those are pretty good. Or have some kind of music that will still awaken you, not disrupt you. The other is, don't have your electronics by the head of your bed. One of the things we found, and because we can measure EEG activity or low-level electrical activity in the brain, even though the phone is not on, let's say, but it's in the room, it's not ringing, it's on buzz, every time that phone gets an alert, we found that there was a micro reaction in the brain, which means it's kind of like a mother when the baby's sleeping, you know, three doors down, and it's a new mother and the baby starts crying, they jump up right away, because we have this primitive part of our brain called the reticular activating system, and it's actually scanning our environment. Even when we're in deep sleep, it's scanning. The only time that it's kind of turned off is, and we've all experienced this, we've fallen asleep in front of the TV and somebody tries to wake us up and they go, hey, wow, you are dead to the world. It was because you were in that deep delta, which is a sleep where it's actually called sleep paralysis. You know, you don't even move, you're just out.
Well, great. Dr. Porter, these are definitely some tips, some I even haven't even heard of before myself. So we really appreciate the information, and hopefully we'll help some people get some good sleep after all this unrest. For more direct sleep tips and a link to Dr. Porter's book, head to braintap.com. Staff at Shriners Hospital for Children in Portland, Oregon, have been working on implementing a telehealth option to provide care to patients without requiring them to come to the hospital. But in the face of COVID-19, this project needed to be escalated and implemented much faster. Lacey Ganim is a certified medical assistant who has been a large force in making this happen. She is our healthcare hero today. Lacey, tell us more about this program shift and why it needed to be expedited at Shriners.
Here at Shriners Hospital for Children, Portland, the health and safety of our patients and families and staff is always our highest priority. We had already been working on developing a telehealth program, which was going to launch soon, but when COVID-19 came into the picture, we knew that the program needed to launch sooner so that we could adapt to the pandemic. We're calling the program Fast Track Video Visits, and the focus of the program is all about the safety, convenience, and patient satisfaction. This allows both new and existing patients to be seen virtually by one of our pediatric orthopedic physicians here. We're hoping that the Fast Track Video Visits eases the stress related to maintaining appointments and complying with stay-at-home orders that are in place. For us, this is an opportunity to provide more convenient care without the patient leaving their home, which also decreases, you know, their risk of exposure while they're traveling about in their community. Also, it allows the doctors to have more time to spend communicating with each of these patients and families, which is better medical care. And right now, you know, it's a pretty scary time for everyone. But we want the families to know that we're still here and a resource for them. And we see new and existing patients, and they're welcome to call the hospital to determine if the fast track video visits is appropriate for them.
And Lacey, why is it important for you in this program to greet all the families yourself and also follow up?
It's important because that way the family has pretty much one contact. You know, it makes it a lot less confusing if they just have one contact that they can speak to, schedule with, follow up with. If you have multiple people involved, it can get kind of confusing for the families.
And how have patients and families reacted to this option? I mean, how do they say it's helping them, especially during this pandemic?
It has been very convenient for them to be able to be at home and see the doctor through the video. The doctor is able to actually examine them. If they have incisions, you can see the incision site very easily. They can examine the limbs, see them walk. They can check their AFOs, things like that, their walkers. So it's very convenient for the families to be able to just see the doctor through the video instead of having to leave their home during this pandemic and come in here. It's a lot safer. So the families are pretty happy with it.
Tell us a bit how you and your staff have just been holding up over at Shriners during this whole pandemic. What's, you know, the scene kind of been?
We're holding up pretty well. We've got a lot of employees that are working from home, and then we've got employees that are working in different offices. You know, we all keep masks on, 6 feet apart. It's been a little different. Hard for us not to be able to be together so much, but we're definitely working through it.
Great. Lacey, is there anything else you want to add about this program over at Shriners?
Just that if families would like to do video visit, give us a call at 503-221-3422 and see if this is an option for them. We'd love to be able to see them through the video if they're not comfortable leaving their home.
This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly. Reach out to us with your thoughts or ideas about reopening at COVID19@radiomd.com. That's COVID19@radiomd.com. I'm Caitlin White. Stay safe and socially distant.